Hey, friend, we are back this week with another amazing episode from the archives of the Proof to Product podcast. With over 375 episodes here on this podcast, there is literally a goldmine of information, and it can be hard to take it all in. So whether you're a new listener or you've been around for a while, this one is a must listen. Today's episode is a look back at Paper Camp alumni Brittany O'Brien's journey growing her stationery and gift company, Brittany Page. In episode 258, Brittany shared how she scaled her wholesale program up to 500 accounts. That was a big milestone for her. And in today's episode, she is sharing what it was like expanding to 1,000 wholesale accounts, and now she's grown even beyond that. Brittany has had such incredible growth, and I know her story has been inspiring for many of our listeners, which is why we are re-airing it today. Speaking of wholesale, we are gearing up for the next round of Paper Camp, our four-week coaching program that teaches you how to start and scale your wholesale program. We have coached more than 31,000 wholesale brands in this program and through our other programs, and these folks sell their products to retail stores worldwide. I'm talking about stores such as Target, Macy's, World Market, Starbucks, Anthropologie, as well as independent retail shops all around the globe. Now, if you want to learn how to get your products on the shelves of stores, get on our wait list. You can do that at prooftoproduct.com/papercamp. That's prooftoproduct.com/papercamp. Now, I have to add here, Paper Camp is a live coaching program, meaning that you will have an opportunity to get all of your questions answered by me, our coaching team, and our guest mentors. You have support in Paper Camp that no other DIY courses or memberships can provide. So our next round starts soon, and we do sell out every time. So get on that wait list at prooftoproduct.com/papercamp. Last time Brittany O'Brien was on the podcast was back in 2022, and we were talking about how she scaled her business to 500 wholesale accounts. That episode was 258 if you want to go back and listen. Well, earlier this year, Brittany crossed a new milestone. Her products are now sold in over 1,000 stores, and today we're going to dig into what the last year and a half has looked like for her. Specifically, we're talking about customer acquisition versus customer retention strategies, fair SEO, and how trade shows have played a part in her substantial growth. Brittany is a New York City-based illustrator and the owner of the stationery and gift company Brittany Page. Originally a graphic designer in the corporate fashion world, she started her business as a side hustle while working full-time. Since then, she has illustrated for clients both large and small, such as Always, Givingly, and The Zoe Report. In addition to working on custom illustrations, she also creates witty and empowered goods for the unapologetic girl, including greeting cards, stickers, candles, pen sets, and more. Her products are inspired by current events, city living, and pop culture, and they can be found in over 1,000 retailers worldwide, including Macy's and Paper Source. Today's episode is brought to you by our Unlock Buyer's Secrets interview series. To make a strong first impression with wholesale buyers, we need to do a few things really well. We need to make it easy for stores to purchase from us. We need to have clear pricing and terms and conditions. We need to clearly communicate and add value at every single touch point. And we need to focus on building strong relationships with our customers. And all of that becomes infinitely easier when we actively listen to our customers. This on-demand interview series will give you a competitive edge by providing you an exclusive window into what buyers want and need from you if you're selling wholesale. And the best part is it's only $27. So get access at prooftoproduct.com/unlock. That's prooftoproduct.com/unlock. I'm Katie Hunt, wholesale expert, business strategist, and mom of four. I'm also the host of the Proof to Product podcast. Since 2011, I've coached thousands of brands whose products can be found on the shelves of indie shops and big box stores all around the world. If you are a creative entrepreneur that makes and sells physical goods, you're in the right place. Here on Proof to Product, you'll learn new strategies for product development, sales, marketing, and more. It's like your weekly dose of business school, and we're going to help you confidently grow your revenue in your own way and at your own pace. So let's get started. Brittany, welcome back to Proof to Product.
Oh, hi, Katie. It's so good to be back.
I am happy to have you. So you were originally on the podcast back in 2022, and we talked about scaling your business to 500 wholesale accounts. And earlier this year, was it the end of last year or the very first day of this year, you hit 1,000 stores that you're working with on the wholesale side. So first off, congratulations.
And thank you.
You must be thrilled. Are you excited?
I am. It was definitely like a milestone that I was chasing after. It's super exciting to have hit that. I hit it literally on the 31st of 2023. So it was a great way to enter the new year.
That's fantastic. I remember seeing your videos and I'm like, I don't remember if it was like the first day kickoff or if it was the last day finish it off, but that's awesome. So tell us what the last year and a half has looked like since we last talked. I mean, going from 500 shops to 1,000 is a pretty big jump. I mean, you talked a lot about your marketing strategy on the last episode, but what has this last year and a half looked like for you?
Yeah, so I think it's worth mentioning that 1,000 feels a lot different than 500, both like super exciting and successful in their own way. But I feel like I have now like unlocked a different level, like the capacity that I'm operating at. And I feel it. And like there's always going to be growing pains, no matter like what milestone you achieve. But this one, it's just like we're operating at a higher volume. I'm like joking that like my email, I can't get to my emails. I was always like a zero inbox girly. And I always was like, never understood. Like, what do you mean? Like, why aren't people replying? And now I'm like, if I reply in 2 to 3 days, that's good. So I do think it's just like worth noting that it's been a little crazy.
Yeah.
But exciting regardless. And, you know, there's been different like strategies to get there, which I'm happy to like jump into at any point. But yeah.
I love that you acknowledge that you've set these milestones for yourself. Now you're hitting them, but you're also feeling the pain points that come with that, right? We hit new challenges and hurdles when we hit these new stages of business. And I think it's really important that we acknowledge that. Some things get easier, but some things also get more difficult. And I appreciate you taking the time to share that. You know, for listeners who are kind of at that 300 to 500 store mark, and they maybe have a goal of 1,000 like you did, what advice would you give them?
Yeah. So I think there are, for me, there were a few different like pillars of strategies that we use to get there. One of which was email outreach, which I don't really need to go into because our last episode, I feel like really jumped into the nitty gritty of that. So if anyone wanted to know like my strategy for that, it was very much covered in the August 22 episode. But the others would be trade shows. Yay, which I'm on a trade show high right now. I'm happy to jump into that. Yeah. And also working on like optimizing the fair SEO. So maybe I'll jump into that first.
If that yeah, let's talk good. About that one. Yeah. Let's do it.
Cool. So I think what I'm realizing, which you love to say, is that fair is a tool.
Yes, it is. Let's say it again. Fair is a tool.
I know that's like, I feel like you should trademark that at this point. But yeah, so I started working with, I got assigned a fair rep a couple, maybe like 2 years ago now. I don't know if everyone gets them. Maybe you have to have like a certain, maybe there's like a certain volume you have to do. And I worked with her to see what people, what keywords people had been using, customers searching for products. And an example of like what I discovered, I'm going to give a very specific example. Valentine's Day was being searched for in November. And I wasn't releasing my Valentine's Day collection until the first week of January. And so being able to optimize my product launches around when customers are searching for products has really helped. And so this year, I launched Valentine's Day the first week of December. And I feel like I was able to capture an entire new audience just by making those little tweaks. And you're able to apply by looking into the analytics that FAIR provides you for keywords and whatnot. You're able to start like tweaking your strategy based around that. And now like, I want to preface this with like, we know that FAIR has been making a lot of changes and we cannot do every single thing they ask of us and we shouldn't be doing that. But if there's something that you were, I don't know, interested in trying out then, and you have the bandwidth to do it, then why not? So like I had the bandwidth to launch Valentine's Day in December. I just thought that customers didn't want to shop for Valentine's Day in December because I thought they were busy with holidays and they clearly weren't. And so that was like a very interesting thing. And it's been fun to play around with that.
I'm so glad you brought this example up because this is very timely. We're in the first week of running Paper Camp as we're recording this right now. And one of the things we talk about in Paper Camp are the release cycles. And one of the dates that we provide people is October is the time when you want to be releasing Valentine's Day so that you're capturing those early crowd of buyers that are purchasing direct or online or whatever it might be. And everyone, every time we run this program, they gawk at me like, who in their right mind is looking for Valentine's Day that early, right? But that is when like sales reps want it. And that means that's when we need to be adding it to the platform. And even if the core buyers for that segment aren't shopping until December or January, if you have it up early, like you said, you'll capture that early wave of buyer. And so I love that one, you're adjusting your release schedules to better accommodate, you know, the analytics are showing you, the data points are showing you, but that you also saw results from that. And you did see more orders coming in from that, it sounds like.
100%. And, you know, I think like people get, you know, other people in our community, they get really worried. They're like, oh, well, I should be then releasing in October, right? Like Katie said October or Fair said October, whoever. And it's, I would have loved to release in October, but I wasn't able to do that, right?
Right, exactly. So December, yes.
I was able to do December. And I think like, it's good to hear the data from people and then make a decision based on what you're able to do.
100%.
And I think that's been really exciting. And just like another fun little example is a product that I do is wrapping paper. And every time someone orders from me on Fair, I message them and I say, you know, where did you hear from me? And a lot of times they'll reply and they're like, oh, I was searching wrapping paper during the holiday season. And I was like, this is so interesting. So people are searching for wrapping paper during Christmas, right? And it almost acted as like a gateway drug into my brand. And I'm not telling everyone, oh, you should all go do wrapping paper now and make sure that you've released wrapping paper for Christmas because people are going to do that. But I don't know if someone maybe was toying around with the idea of Easter cards, but they weren't sure. Easter is a huge search word for Fair. And I actually released one or two cards this year. I never did them before. I was like, I have one or two ideas. Let me just test it. Maybe it's going to act as that gateway into introducing someone into my brand. And I think like, again, I'll say it again. I feel like our community sometimes like we're artists and we're just like, everyone's telling me what I'm supposed to do, but like, they're just suggesting it and like, do what you can with that information.
I'm so glad you said this because yes, there are strategies, there are tactics, there are things that have worked for one business or many businesses, but ultimately you have to take those things and adapt them to what works for you, whether it's coming from me, whether it's coming from Fair or anyone else out there. So thank you for acknowledging that because it is important. I think there's no easy button in business and there's no one pathway to success. Everyone's going to have a different way. So I love that you're experimenting too with Easter cards and talking about how some of these things that you didn't expect have now become these entry points for people to find your brand and like order more from you. That's really cool. Okay. You mentioned trade shows were also a big piece of helping you get to the 1,000 mark. So you want to talk about that a little bit? I know you just came back from Atlanta and also New York Now. How did they go?
Yes. Trade shows. I'm so interested in the rhetoric going on in the online space about trade shows right now. I'm sure you are too. I have done 8 shows total since 2019, most of which had been like New York Now / National Stationery Show, and that still existed. And then I just most recently did Atlanta. And I mean, for me, the goal for trade shows will always be to write orders at the show. That's always the primary goal when I go there. I would be lying if I said if I walked away from a show in the red that I wouldn't be disappointed and upset, because I would be. And that's who I am. But I also think that there's a lot of people who are like, oh, you don't need trade shows because of these online platforms like Fair, or, you know, I don't know if there's many others these days.
I know.
Which is a topic for another time. But, and that's true, right? Like you don't necessarily need them, but I am now looking at trade shows in a different way. So yes, I want to go and I want to find new accounts and I want to see my old customers, but I also want to, for those new customers, I want to lock in that 0% commission. And if anyone did listen to my old episode, you know how anal I am about trying. It's almost become a game. And especially with all of the new Fair requirements that they've been dropping, now I'm like, oh no, now I'm really going to play the game. Like, who's going to get the account first, Brittany or Fair? And, you know, I pulled a little scenario for you. I know you love numbers. And
I do.
I know our audience, that your audience loves numbers. And so just from January 1st until present day of this year, so what, about 6 weeks into 2024, I have gained 103 new accounts.
Wow.
New wholesale accounts. That was pretty impressive, right?
That is, yeah.
Now, the breakdown of that, 50 have come from FAIR, as in someone searched me on FAIR and they found me through FAIR. 53 of those have come from me. And within that 53, half of them are either because of a trade show or because of my email outreach.
And so
those are 53 accounts that could have been FAIR's, and they're not. They're mine now. And so I think, like, you know, when you leave a trade show, you have an entire sheet or book or whatever of all of these leads. You have pictures of badges, you have business cards, you have people writing down your email address. And all of that information can get inputted into FAIR and help, you know, that's 15% adds up, baby. Like, mm-hmm.
And it's not just the first order, it's all orders going forward. So I don't blame you for making it a game to capture them before FAIR captures them. Yeah.
And I think trade shows have been incremental in growing my business. You know, I just had my 7th show at New York Now. I like to say that New York Now is my home field advantage because I live so close by. But, you know, people kind of expect to see me there. And it's so nice to connect with them in person. I also kind of had this revelation. I just did Atlanta and New York back to back. And when I went to Atlanta, what was so interesting is everyone I saw was no one from New York. It really was just a different region. But some of the accounts that I saw who were reorders, who were already my account, I looked them up. They hadn't ordered with me in 1 or 2 years. Some people 2020, okay? And I had this like moment where I was like, oh crap, that's bad. Like, that's my fault. And it was so great to be able to then meet them in person. Like, they'd come up to my booth. They're like, oh, you know, we ordered from you. And I'd quickly look them up on my laptop. And I'm like, you haven't ordered with me since 2021. And they're like, well, let's change that. And so having that presence at that show, I really do think it's just a nice reminder to let people know, hey, I exist. Hey, let's talk in person. And maybe next time they go to order cards online, they'll remember, oh, Brittany was so nice and cool at that show. We should order from Brittany Page again. But yeah, I did just have this moment where I was like, 2024, after these 6 weeks of trade shows, like 2024 is now the year of nurturing my 1,000 accounts.
So I was going to say, you've been working hard on the acquisition side of things, the customer acquisition, bringing in new accounts, getting to this number of 1,000. And now that's where I wanted to take this conversation next of like, what are you currently doing to nurture and engage the existing accounts you have so that they are coming back with a higher reorder percentage, higher AOV, you know, these metrics that we want to be monitoring. Do you have something in place already? Or if not, what are you going to be building out this year?
Yeah. So, I mean, we have like our emails in place and whatnot. We do email our current accounts very regularly, you know, anywhere between 2 to 4 times a month.
That's great.
But I'm just afraid it's not enough. And, you know, something that I've noted, I was doing a lot of emailing via FAIR and, you know, because that was what they were pushing for so long. And so many people have unsubscribed. And I think it's because they're just getting so many emails from all these brands on FAIR. And so a big initiative that I'm actually going to have this year is personally emailing all of those accounts and asking if they would like to be on my own wholesale newsletter that is not through FAIR. And, you know, I expect a lot of people won't reply or they won't want you, and that's totally okay. But that's something that I feel like I need to separate it out. I also am going to have an initiative of like making sure I'm following all of those accounts on Instagram and hoping that they follow me back. And I'm going to hire like a VA to do that. And I also just like want to continue being at those shows and like, I want to be like really nurturing those like VIP accounts, like those 25 plus accounts that I could just tell you right now are my best customers, and like take them out to dinner at the show. And like, there's no reason why I can't be doing that and like really connecting with them. I feel like that's such an old school, like salesman's type thing to say, like, oh yeah, we're going to take our clients out to dinner. But I mean, they're in town, they're coming in from Texas. Like, why wouldn't I like take them out to the best city in the world to eat delicious food, which I enjoy doing anyways. So I think just like more of that, you know, just more of like, how do I show my VIP accounts that they are VIP and I love them very much? And those other people, you know, how do I get them to just keep reordering and show them that, hey, you liked me once, I like you too. Let's keep doing this together.
Right. Let's keep dating.
Let's keep dating.
One of the things I talk about with my advisory board clients is I want them focused on two different segments of their existing stockist list. One is that top 20% and doing like the old school stuff like you talked about. Like, let's get back to basics. How can we truly build a relationship and connect with people on a human-to-human level? Being at those shows like you talked about with the face-to-face connections and doing dinner or like, you know, coffee chats or whatever it is, like those things do matter. They really do matter because then we get to know that person on a real human level, which means we can serve them better as, you know, somebody that's working with them. The other segment I tell folks to look at are the fall off people, the people who haven't ordered in the last 6 months to 9 months. And let's have a re-engagement campaign for them. Because like you said, when you're sitting at the show and you're like, wait, we used to work together, but this was a couple years ago. You know, if we can kind of catch that before it gets to that point, that's where the retention piece kicks in. So I love that you're doing all of that. That sounds really great. And I'll be curious to hear how it all goes for you.
Yeah, for sure. I'll keep you posted. I think it's definitely an endeavor that I want to focus on. And I think I'll see more of those reorders.
Yeah. So you just did Atlanta and New York now back to back. Atlanta was a new show for you. You had never gone before. I like too that you touched on the fact that it's a totally different audience. It's a different segment of buyers that are there. We tell that to people, but I don't know that they hear it as much until you experience it. Like, did you feel like it opened up a whole new audience for you?
Definitely. That was one of my biggest concerns about doing Atlanta, because we had Atlanta like 2 weeks into the new year. Then I was driving back from Atlanta to New Jersey, which I know is crazy in itself, but I was driving back from Atlanta to New Jersey and the fair market, the virtual market was going on. So like as my 14-hour drive, those are coming in. And then not even 2 weeks later, I have New York now. And I was really concerned. I was like, are these going to be eating into each other? Like, you know, is Atlanta going to eat into my New York profit? And I can confidently say it didn't. Every account that I either a new account or reorder from Atlanta was the Southeast or like, you know, kind of like Texas, those. And then I only saw two buyers from New York now at Atlanta. And they they dropped by and they're like, you know, they're kind of like those VIP and they were just like, hey, Britt, here's a Diet Coke. See you in New York. I was like, see you in New York. Like,
that's fun.
Which was great. So with Atlanta, I just feel like all of those accounts are from a different region. And I don't have a presence in that region typically, whereas I do have a presence in New York. And that's why I've been able to have so many retailers from those areas. So being able to be in Atlanta and get that presence there, I think will open up just like more opportunity there. And I would be interested to even try like a Dallas or a Vegas or something to just test that out and see like, who are the people going to those shows?
That was going to be my next question. Given this taste of new and regional types of shows, I'm seeing an uptick in the regional shows becoming a lot more popular. Like you said, Dallas, Las Vegas, Atlanta is obviously a larger show than that, but and also specialty shows. And I wondered if you had now an itch to go to some of those maybe smaller market type shows where you might be the only stationery and gift brand there, but yet it's going to be like a very niche segment. Do you have interest in that?
I definitely do. I've always been interested in it's pool, right? Pool, yep. Is the
and magic.
Is like, mm-hmm. Yeah, and magic. Yes, that's what it was. Because I do have like a good amount of kind of like fashion boutique women's brands. And I think my brand is like a trendy pop culture brand really just like lends itself well into that customer. And so I've always been very interested in that. Even at Atlanta, a woman who was running a coffee show that like sits side by like a restaurant show and it's in like New York and Chicago. I'm not going to do it this year, but I am planning on walking it because I do think that like if you are the only card vendor at a coffee shop show, I think your chances of doing well are probably pretty good.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think it's definitely something to explore for sure.
We just had Ziba from Trayleaf come into the Labs community and talk about, she did I'm going to get the name wrong, but it was in Florida and it was like a tropical plant show in Florida. And she does these incredible laser cut trellises for indoor plants. Beautiful. And she said it was an amazing show for her because there were not other brands like hers there selling similar products. And she met so many great contacts that were buying at the show ready to go, but also at the follow-up too. And I think it's fun to find these unique shows that could be a spot, but you know, it's a risk, right? Like that's why a lot of people don't do shows because there is the financial commitment, the time commitment. It is a lot of work to do shows. There's a ton of benefits, but your business also has to be primed and yours clearly is.
Yeah, I definitely think, of course, there's a risk, but I think if you, especially if you have that like niche brand, like, you know, if you have a plant brand or, you know, I have a friend who kind of is a foodie brand and she's going to do like a grocery trade show this year. And I think that's so interesting. And I think you really just have to like nail down like who is your customer and where does that sit and think of those other shows for it. Yeah.
Oh, I love that. Talk to me about TikTok. When we talked last, you were still using TikTok. Are you still using that as a way to grow more the D2C side of your business? Or have you kind of scaled back? What are you doing there?
Yeah.
No judgment, just curiosity.
Oh my God, it's such a beast. No, I'm still doing it. I've really strayed away from like the small business TikTok of it all. I think it got a little oversaturated pretty quickly. And I just don't think that TikTok was like rewarding small business content in the way that it did in like 2021. I also like didn't really love doing it anyways. I was kind of doing it as a need to do it. So now I just use TikTok to talk about all of my favorite movies and shows and books.
I have been loving your conversations around the, I mean, I love your business content too, but I think you've really found your space with your personal content as well.
Yeah. And you know, I think what it all is like relatable because my brand is my name. It is me. And it's also about trends and what's happening in pop culture. So it's actually very much like top of the funnel content of like getting people who like the same things as me. I'm talking about Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce. And, you know, if other people like Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce and they like what I'm saying about them, maybe they'll hit follow and then maybe they'll see another video and then maybe they'll like click my Instagram one day and be like, wait, this girl is the Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce card. Like, so I think like the goal for 2024 is to like continue that top of funnel content. And how do I kind of convert the DTC people from TikTok into Instagram customers, essentially? Yeah. So we'll see. But I do love TikTok, but it's also just like such a beast. And all of these platforms are such a beast.
I know. I did a story on Instagram last night where I was talking about how now in 2024, it's much easier to start a business, right? Like there's so many tools and things that make it easy to start a business, but to grow and sustain a business now in 2024 is like a lot harder because of things like what we're talking about here, of the expectations of, oh, I have to be putting out videos and I have to be constantly putting out the content engine. And it's like, we already have enough on our plate getting our products out to market and using that creative juice rather to get product out to market. You know, I'm not explaining it well, but you know what I mean?
No, 100%. I just paid a boutique marketing company to do like an audit of my Instagram. And
oh, nice.
They like propose like a content calendar and stuff because I really neglected Instagram over the last year. Because you just can't do it all.
No, you can't.
You just can't. And, you know, they proposed like this 30-day content calendar and all this stuff. So the last 2 days I've been trying to make the content for it. And I'm like hoping to launch like March 1st. And I got nothing else done because I was just, I like was filming myself at the coffee shop, like pretending to work, you know, at the coffee shop. And then I didn't do any of the actual work that I was supposed to do that I was pretending that I was doing. And it's just, you know, it's so crazy, but yeah, it's no joke.
It's a vicious cycle for sure.
Yeah.
All right. Talk to me about your team. I know you've got some interns, you've got your mom working with you. Like how has that kind of shifted? Cause now you're servicing a lot more accounts. You probably need more hands on deck to like get stuff out and process. Yeah.
Referencing what I kind of started with about like really feeling those growing pains, that has really been tough because it really has been like a one woman design studio. I have interns. I have two interns. They are 18-year-old interns. They are high school seniors. They're actually from my old high school. I do the program every year. They have like a senior experience program where they have to intern every Wednesday. It's my fourth year with interns, it's been really helpful. They are very talented artists and I've been able to get like a lot of product out of them, which has been great. Actually, one of my old interns, I still hire on like a contractor basis to do illustrations here and there. And you really, every time I tell people this, they're always like, I could never pick out like what would be theirs and what's yours, which is obviously the goal. So that's been really helpful. I also have a lot of like outsourcing partners. So anytime I get like a big box order from like a Barnes & Noble or a paper source, I have like a printer and a fulfillment center that completely does that. All I have to do is like the paperwork on the back end of it. But otherwise, like I don't even touch those orders, which has been
perfect,
really helpful. But I do have exciting news that I am planning on hiring my mother, Linda, #Linda, full-time this year. Fantastic. We are in the middle of figuring that out, but it's, I mean, she's, you know, I'm not allowed to say her age, but she's elder. She had me at 42. So you could do the math. And she works full time now. And then she comes home and she does Brittany Page stuff. And then she does Brittany Page stuff on the weekend. And I originally thought maybe 2025. And during trade show season this year, I just like said to her, I was like, I think it's time. We can afford it. Let's do it. So she's very excited, but we're figuring that out. Yeah, we're figuring it out.
Oh, that's exciting. So is she your only employee then?
She's my only like technical, okay, like yes,
like employee. On the books
employee. And she will be like a full-time employee too.
Oh.
Which will
girl.
Be great.
Big girl
I
pants.
Know. You know, I sat down with my accountant and I was like, can I afford this? And yeah, it's scary. You know, it is, especially because it's my family member. And like I said, I'm not allowed to say her age, but she is older. So it's like, it's not just the decision of, can I afford this employee? It's also like, can I afford my mom for the next like 5 years? Because that's like, this is going to be her job. So
yeah,
it's interesting working with family, but I honestly couldn't, I actually can't imagine working with anyone else but family, to be honest.
Oh, yeah. Well, there is something to be said about like being responsible for someone else's livelihood, whether it's family or just another team member. It's a responsibility and, you know, not one to be taken lightly too. So that's awesome. Congrats on that. Well, what are you working on next? What do you want to share with our listeners?
Yeah, well, I am throwing myself a party for hitting 1,000 retailers.
As you should.
Yep. I am renting out a restaurant open bar situation and I am treating like 60 family/friends people. I am sick of only celebrating women for marriage and children. And so I just was like, you know what? Business write-off.
That's incredible. I'm so happy for you. That's going to be great.
Thanks. Yeah. So that I'll be doing that in March, which is going to be really exciting and should be fun just to like celebrate with my friends and family. But otherwise, you know, I do feel like talking about like the nurturing earlier, I'm ready to just kind of put wholesale, I don't want to say on automate, but like kind of let it run itself this year. And definitely not going to be chasing after new accounts. I will most likely do New York Now in August and, you know, just kind of continue to have presence there. But I don't really feel a need to keep chasing new accounts at this point. And I just want to like nurture my current accounts. And, you know, I'm always looking for ways to like branch off and to do other like creative endeavors, like whether it's a little bit more like licensing, I still want to do some sort of book thing. So I promised myself that January and February were for wholesale growth. And I was doing those trade shows. And starting March, it's just kind of like a different focus. So I'm really excited to just like not be constantly like chasing new accounts and just how do I grow? I think it'll be an interesting year to see how that plays out.
It sounds like it's kind of a recalibration year in terms of, okay, you've got now more people on deck to help you. You can, you know, refine some of the systems you already have in place to work better for you, get those nurturing and, you know, that kind of stuff set up too, or enhance it. It sounds great. It sounds like you've got a lot of good stuff planned for this year.
Thank you. I think I do. And I'm excited to see where it goes. It is crazy to think that I've been doing this for like a little over 5 years now.
Yeah.
And how crazy it's grown every year. But I feel very proud of myself. And I think we don't like sit in that, you know, we're just like always on to the next thing. I'm such a type A planner. I'm always like, well, what's next? What's next? What's next? And like, I don't know, I'm just going to throw myself a party and have an open bar and enjoy that and just kind of sit in it. So
I couldn't agree with you more. I think so many of us, because we're wearing so many hats in business, that we don't stop to celebrate. We just are on to the next thing, head down, doing the work. And so I applaud you for not only celebrating yourself, but bring in your family and friends into it as well. They should be celebrating as well. So
yes.
Awesome. Yes. Well, let people know where they can find your products online and follow you on social.
Great. Yes. So it is BrittanyPageDesigns.com. We have like a newer website that we did this past year. It's beautiful. And I'm sorry, it's Brittany Page or Brittany Page Designs, either one.com will get you there. And at Brittany Page Designs on Instagram and TikTok.
Fantastic. We'll include that in the show notes so everybody can easily find you. But Brittany, thank you for coming back and giving us an update and telling us where you're at now. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Katie. It was really good. It's always good catching up with you.
I know. You too. It is so fun to hear these updates from our alumni and also hearing what strategies and tactics they're using to reach their next level goals. So big kudos to Brittany on her strategic growth and for coming back today to share her story with us. I cannot wait to see where she goes next. Before we sign off, I want to share a shocking statistic with you. 49% of our customers want to hear from us on a consistent basis. And yet, only a small percentage of product-based business owners are actively sending monthly emails to their direct-to-consumer and wholesale customers. When I asked our community, why aren't you sending more emails? They said they weren't sure what to say, how often to send, and the biggest pain point was perception. No one wanted to come off as salesy or pushy, and I kindly replied to them and said, if people don't know about your product line, they aren't going to buy it. Email marketing is hands down one of the best ways to create long-standing, strong connections with customers, and sending consistent nurture emails leads to repeat orders and larger orders. But sitting in front of a blank screen can feel really intimidating. So if you have struggled with what to say or when to send those emails, or even how to plan out your email marketing strategies, grab our free email marketing guide for product makers. You can get it at proofToProduct.com/email marketing. This workbook and the optional training that you can purchase if you want has helped hundreds of product makers plan out an entire year's worth of emails. No more sitting in front of your computer wondering what to say. And the best part, we'll show you how to create systems and templates that you can rinse and repeat year after year. So grab your copy at proofToProduct.com/email marketing. All right, friends, thanks for having us today, letting us hang out with you and listening until the end. I'll be back soon with a new episode.